I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. Now, I'm not saying I can predict the future, but one doesn't have to be Nostradamus to know what bad tax policy can do to a city. Plus, Democrats say it should bring you joy to pay higher taxes. I'm not kidding. And finally, should Congress defund NPR? We'll discuss the merits of that and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. And if you're a member of law enforcement, military, or a veteran, you can get 30% off your first year of Undivided by using the promo code USA. Just go to patreon.com/undivided. Hello and welcome to Undivided on this Wednesday hump day. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Seattle reaping what it sows. And to be clear, I don't feel bad for Seattle. I'm going to talk about all this. I'm going to talk about the devastating impacts that it's going to have on the economy and the city. I just don't feel bad for Seattle anymore. It's interesting because I was looking back at some old work I did. I mean, when I was in mainstream news, like I'm talking 6, 7, 8 years ago, when I was pretty young, I was like 26 years old when I started in TV news. And I'm not saying I'm a genius or anything. I'm just saying that even at 26 years old, I understood the implications of Seattle's horrible tax policy that they were pushing at the time. And yet you have all these adults and elected leaders who were, you know, in charge of the city then and now, who just didn't seem to put the pieces together about what would happen if they targeted some of the city and the state's largest employers and punished them, essentially, with additional taxes for daring to pay people high-paying jobs, et cetera. So there's a little context that's needed before we get into the, gee, told you so moment of this. So back in 2018, there was, led by then Seattle City Councilwoman Shama Sawant, a socialist, her whole shtick was about taxing Amazon, like Jeff Bezos, evil, horrible person. You probably remember this, right? It was very, very drama-filled. And at the time in 2018, they were pushing something called a head tax, where they were basically taxing businesses for each employee. And the way they were structuring it was that it was specifically levy additional taxes against businesses like Amazon. It was like a Jeff Bezos tax, right? So Amazon told them at the time, look, if you do this, there are going to be consequences. If you do this, we'll probably move jobs out of the city to a place that doesn't punish us for paying people well. So at that time when this debate was going on, I had Shama Sawant on, I think, Fox 13 at the time to question her about this. And I said this.
You have called Jeff Bezos a bully. You have called the threat to take 7,000 jobs out of the city extortion. What if it's not just a threat? What if it's not just extortion? And Jeff Bezos lets 7,000 jobs walk out of this city. Are you going to own that?
I think Jeff Bezos and Amazon should own it. But I think you asked a very important question, Brandi, which is that will they actually do it?
Are you okay with that if they take 7,000 jobs out of the city?
Of course not.
But blah, 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 word soup as normal. And that's exactly what Amazon did. So the head tax passed in 2018, but you'll remember they turned around and they promptly repealed it because it was like this huge backlash over it in the business community. But then in the summer of 2020, while all of us were distracted with the rioting and the Chaz Chop ordeal, the city council pushed through basically a different version of the head tax. It was called their payroll tax. It was a tax on high-paying jobs. So it was a repackaging of the same thing that they'd passed in 2018, ended up repealing. So again, we're distracted by all these things and the city council pushes through this payroll tax on high paying jobs. And I said the same thing in 2020 that I said in 2018, and Amazon said the same thing in 2020 that it had said in 2018. If you target us out for taxation, there are gonna be consequences for that. And as we've said during the current tax debate right now, what happens when you target employers and big businesses for taxation? What's going to happen? Well, they're going to leave, right? It does not take a rocket scientist. I'm not Nostradamus for predicting that this would go south for the city. And it's exactly what we're seeing right now. So there was a report that came out, the 2024 year-end revenue report that was released by the city of Seattle. And what does it show? Gee, anybody want to guess what it shows? Well, it shows that their collection of this payroll tax has plummeted. Why? Because businesses did exactly what they said they were going to do, and they took jobs elsewhere. Huge shock, right? So now the city's in this panic. Oh my gosh, we're in a budget crisis because we're not collecting the level of payroll taxes we expected to collect with our tax on high-paying jobs, because the businesses told us they did exactly what they told us they were going to do 7-8 years ago. And now we're all surprised by it. Mayor Bruce Harrell came out. He said today's announcement that payroll expense tax revenues collected in 2024 were $47 million lower than projected requires action to ensure our budget remains balanced. And then he goes on to say, and I will give him credit. You know, I think he fell into some of the bad ways back when this was first being debated in 2018 and was trying to sort of appease a certain segment of progressives, but he's since been a little more business friendly. But he comes out, he says, this news also underscores why I have been consistent in noting the fragile nature of our economic recovery. I wish he'd been more consistent back then. We know this decrease in revenue is aligned with recent reports of major employers moving thousands of high-paying jobs out of Seattle to other cities in our region, like Amazon, that picked up in 2020 after the payroll tax went into effect, and they moved 10,000 jobs over to Bellevue. So this is just the natural result of saying, going to that business saying, hey, big business, you evil bad, Jeff Bezos, tisk tisk. And of course, they're going to take jobs away. And they're just going to move them to somewhere that appreciates the economic boost that they bring. So you have this going on in Seattle. Again, not a surprise. Doesn't take, what do you call, crystal ball reader? What do you call a crystal ball reader? Is there a name
fortune
for
teller?
Thank you.
Yeah, there we go.
Doesn't take a fortune teller to have figured out that this was going to happen. But it's incredibly relevant that this is all coming out right now and in black and white in ways that can't be denied, and that Seattle's Democratic mayor won't deny, that the tax cause and effect, the tax led to businesses leaving the city, therefore our revenue is down. So it's really relevant that we're having this conversation right now, and there's evidence of this right now. Why? Because as we speak, Democrats in Olympia want to take that payroll tax that Seattle has and spread it across the entire state. It was just one element of their massive tax package that they released last week, expanding the business tax. So you want to, again, so this would target out employers who pay people too much, basically, over $176,000 a year. So now we know, no, as if it was in doubt, but for anyone who needed it, who needed to actually see the consequences of it play out. So we know exactly what happened with Seattle's payroll tax. Sure, they collected a bit of money from it in the early years of it, and then businesses started taking those high-paying jobs elsewhere. So let's really use our noodles here, okay? So what's going to happen if you take that tax that Seattle has and you make it statewide? Well, it's no longer advantageous for Amazon to simply move its jobs over to Bellevue, because Bellevue is going to, jobs in Bellevue are going to be subjected to the same tax. So what is Amazon going to do with those jobs? And I'm not talking to you guys like your children. I'm talking to Democrats in Olympia like their children, because apparently they fail to comprehend this. Well, Amazon and other employers, they're going to have to take their jobs out of the entire state if the goal is to avoid the payroll tax and the punishment of daring to provide high-paying jobs to the people of Washington and to our economy. This really isn't difficult. I also think it's worth noting, because one of the other taxes on that list that Democrats proposed is the wealth tax, of course, which is we're going to single out people who have worldwide wealth over $50 million for taxation. We're going to tax them on unrealized gains. Well, you can also learn a lesson from what's happening in Seattle right now. $47 million just in Seattle alone, lower than projected. They're not collecting as much money from the tax because the people who they wanted to tax left. So let's use that logic, Democrats, okay? Let's use that logic. So what's going to happen when you pass the wealth tax? You might collect a bunch up front, but after a couple years, most of those really rich people will have found a way not to pay it. But Democrats will have already assigned all that money to things. Oh, we're going to use this wealth tax to fund this and this and close our budget deficit and all of this. And then all of a sudden like that, it's gone. You think that they'll just say, okay, well, we'll just take back that new spending. No, they're going to come to you for the money. Let's just say they $200 million towards education from wealth tax. And they say, oh, this is great. We're expecting this much revenue to come in. We're going to pay for education, this project, that project, slip some money to our friends in the unions. And then all of a sudden the next year, well, those rich people left. So we don't have that tax revenue anymore. You think they're just going to be like, hey, unions, we can't give you that money this time. Take that money back from education, from this project. Hell no, they don't do that. I mean, we're watching them not do that actively right now. They have a $14 billion budget deficit, and all they want to do is raise taxes so they can continue to spend everything they're already spending and more. So what they're going to do is they're going to pass wealth taxes and taxes on big businesses. That revenue is going to decline over time as businesses leave and rich people leave. And who is left holding the bag? Who? Who? You, of course. You're going to be left holding the bag for it. And they're going to come to you, and they're going to increase property taxes, and they're going to increase gas taxes, and they're going to find every which way to take that money out of hardworking people, because they're not going to cut anything. And again, this is not my opinion. This is just what's going to happen, and it's what's happening right now in the city of Seattle. And I would also say, similar to what's going on in Olympia, when Bruce Harrell comes out and says, well, we made $47 million less than we thought, what do you think that Seattle's going to do about it? This is the example, right? I'm giving you guys literally a real-world example, all the receipts at a city level of what's going to happen statewide. What do you think Bruce Harrell says they need to do about it? Because they're collecting less revenue than they expected because all the businesses left. They have to raise your taxes. Oh, gosh. Okay. He said, as we develop the city's 2026 budget, my office will consider all options, including additional revenue sources, which is taxes. So again, I feel like I don't want to like beat this. What is it? What is the phrase PETA doesn't want me to use? Beat a dead horse. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use it anyway. I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but I really do need to talk to these people like they're 3 years old. Everything that just happened in Seattle, passed a tax. People warned you about what would happen. You didn't listen. What people warned you about happened. And now you can't collect the money from the rich people and the big businesses. So now you're going to go reach into the pockets of the poor and the middle class. You guys are horrible. Horrible. It's just, you're helpless. It's so bad. It's unreal. So the other thing that I just, again, Nostradamus. So back, you know, Nicole, I think I've been too hard on my former news self. You know, I've come a long way, right? But I'm looking back at some of these clips today. I said, maybe I was more awake than I thought. Maybe I was more awake. There's this clip, because this is going to feed into all of this. Back in 2020, when Trump lost the election, he did lose the election, to Joe Biden, I had a commentary segment on Fox 13. And I, on my commentary after he lost, was like, okay, so now that Trump's not going to be in office anymore, then Democrats are going to lose their most reliable scapegoat. Here's a clip again from my 2020 show on Fox 13.
Leaders in our state will lose the one thing preventing them from accepting responsibility for their own problems.
The president.
Donald Trump.
The president.
The president.
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
The president.
Donald Trump.
Leaders here can attack President Donald Trump all they want. But once he's gone, so is their favorite scapegoat. And for the first time in 4 years, they will come face to face with the problems they ignored while focusing so much energy on the occupant of the White House. And when they don't like what they see, Donald Trump will no longer be there to take the blame.
See, I was more awake than I give myself credit for. So I was dramatic. Also very dramatic. I was also very, quite dramatic. But I was right. And what I had seen is them, even during CHOP, it was Donald Trump's fault. Everything was Jay Inslee, all climate, everything was Donald Trump's fault. And our state was deteriorating. I was at least awake enough to see that. Our state was deteriorating before our eyes. And so Donald Trump was this really convenient scapegoat for them to not have to take accountability for their own bad decisions. And my thought process was, at least, well, when Trump's gone, you know, when he lost in 2020, maybe they'll have to look in the mirror and be like, this is us. Of course, they didn't do that. They still obsessed over Donald Trump. And now Donald Trump is back. So now what do you think Bruce Harrell is blaming the city's budget crisis on? Any guesses? Donald Trump. It's just crazy. These people are the worst. He said, we also know this news only adds to significant negative impacts for future years when combined with President Trump's actions to rescind grants to our city, implement harmful tariffs, and focus on failed economic policies that prioritize the wealthy over working families. As you're in the same press release having to acknowledge your own failed economic policy. But it's just such a convenient thing for them to politically to be like, Trump. And then that's also what they'll use, right, to sell people on new taxes in Seattle. Oh, we need new taxes because Trump, and 80% of Seattle will be like, oh, here you go. If it's Trump's fault, like, take all the money you need. It's just wild stuff, you guys. It's wild stuff because a kindergartner could understand the cause and effect of this. And our elected leaders at the highest levels simply do not. In fact, they believe that you should feel good about the new tax increases that they're putting forth. In fact, they think that it ought to bring you joy to be paying into some of these wonderful programs. There was this insane press conference where, you know, Democrats are trying to spin this, of course. Nobody likes new taxes per se. So they need there to be a spin on it. And I think the overarching spin is, oh, we have to. We can't cut anything because everything that state government is doing is so critical and essential and important that we have to increase taxes because we're not, none of this is waste. So Senator Jamie Peterson talking about, you know, well, we can't, when we have critical things to pay for, we can't be worried about putting money in our savings account.
So the ability for us essentially to borrow money out of the rainy day fund and then pay it back within the time frame is the approach that we took, because the alternative to that is to do more and deeper cuts to services that people in Washington rely on. And, you know, unlike the some of the proposals that we saw from either Governor Inslee or from Governor Ferguson, where, for example, one that got a lot of attention in our caucus was cutting food banks. We don't want to be in a position to have $1 billion or $1.7 billion sitting in a rainy day fund while people are going hungry because we made cuts that we didn't have to make.
Man, they really use, what is the saddest sounding thing we can use to guilt people? It's like childhood cancer, dead dogs, I don't know what else, and then like starving people. Unpopular opinion, it's not the government's job to stock food banks. Sorry. That's an unpopular opinion. Now, there's a lot of social safety nets out there. We have a robust private and generous private sector. We have a ton of well-funded nonprofits. And I promise you, if the government were to have to back away from certain things like food bank funding, people will come in to close the gap. That's where society takes over. Again, it's the difference with the Democratic mindset, where they believe that the government, because it's good, the taxpayers should foot the bill for it. Because it's good, the government should be involved in it. And that's absurd, because where does that end? We talked about it on the show yesterday. $14 billion budget deficit. They have a line item in the budget to fund classes for immigrants and underprivileged kids to learn to ice skate. And as I said on the show, I love the idea of that. I love hockey. I'm a Minnesotan. I love ice skating. I grew up on skates. I love the idea of teaching immigrants to love hockey. I think that's cool. But just because it's cool doesn't mean that the government needs to be involved in it or that taxpayers need to pay for it. One call to the Kraken. One call, and I guarantee you the Kraken will step in to fill that gap if the government has to withdraw that funding because we're in a budget crisis. So just because it's nice and it sounds good doesn't mean that, and That's the retraining, reprogramming that needs to happen in people's brains. That like, yeah, some of these, there's a lot of things the Democrats want that I think are great things. In case I haven't made that clear, there's a lot of things the Democrats want and want to fund that I think are really important things for society. But they're not things that taxpayers should have to pay for. They're things that the government shouldn't be involved in and that the private sector and nonprofits should get together if they're so important and people are generous and they will fund those things. But again, Democrats, good taxpayers must pay for it. Here is State Rep April Berg, or Senator April Berg, rather.
People find joy in having a well-funded public school. They find joy in having services at the local county and city levels that work, having infrastructure, like Senator Lee has pointed out, that is moving them from point A to point B. They find joy in having available health care. The joy that is had by Washingtonians is the prosperity. And what we're trying to bring back through a series of modest and careful and fair taxes, we are trying to bring back that hope and joy to Washingtonians that frankly have been living under a very regressive tax structure that lends itself to schools that are underfunded because we don't have enough taxes to pay for said schools. So I think that when we look at joy, and the Discovery Pass is an example, you can check out a Discovery Pass from your local library today. That is something that we've had in our state, we'll continue to have in our state. We are raising the price, potentially, so that we can continue to have well-funded state parks. Those state parks bring joy. So I just take umbrage with the fact that we're taxing joy. We're actually taxing things that people want more of and want more sustainability in.
I don't even know where to start. Now, out of fairness, I think it was Jerry Kornfield with The Standard had used the word joy in his question about people feel like you're taxing the joy out of them, essentially. And she responded by basically saying, you should find joy in paying taxes for these things. You should find joy in funding these things. No one is going to find joy in giving up their money. Now, they might believe it's necessary and you just sort of deal with it for certain things. But when the government wants to get into the realm of all of these nice to have things, it's the difference between the needs and the wants. You know, conservatives know that we have to fund the needs. We might disagree here and there about what the needs really are. Some people have a more strict definition of needs. But conservatives mostly believe we need to fund the needs. And then the wants, the nice to haves, just like a family's budget, the things that give you joy, those are the things that the government doesn't need to be involved in. Again, no different than your budget. Like, wow, I would really love a Birkin bag. I wouldn't. I think they're kind of ugly. But let's just say that was my thing. Really, I would really love to have a $40,000 Birkin bag. But like, can't afford it. So, and I, unlike the government, can't reach into my neighbor's pockets and take their money because I'd like to buy a Birkin bag. Like, wow, it would give me joy to go to Daniel's every night for dinner and get a steak and mashed potatoes. You know, I love my mashed potatoes. But that's a bad idea, you know, because I'm on a budget. And I can't reach into the pockets of all the other diners to pay for my steak dinner. This is just really basic stuff. So the idea that we should feel guilty about not wanting our tax money to go to things like food banks, that we should feel guilty about not wanting our tax money to go to help immigrants learn how to ice skate, that's like the mindset we need to beat out of people, not physically, of course, just with facts and reason and common sense. And what's also interesting, I'll just say really quick, I don't want to belabor it, but I would happily donate to an organization that gives skating lessons to immigrants. Again, I grew up skating. I love that. I love hockey. I would happily donate to an organization, the organization that's getting $100,000 in state funds. I would happily do that, but I don't want to fund it via forced taxation. The same thing with food banks. I donate to food banks all the time. Maybe not all the time, that was a little too generous. A couple times a year. We'll bring money to food banks, you'll donate at the grocery store when you see it. I think there's a lot of people who do that, who they, you know, at the checkout during Christmas, they buy that bag of stuff somebody needs for a Thanksgiving or Christmas dinner. That's a choice they make. They think it's really important, and they'd rather do that than have the government do it. And it's also more effective. I can donate a case of peanut butter, and I know that 100% of the money I spent on that, and the peanut butter is going to people who need it. You give tax money to the government, a fraction of it is actually going to help people. Because a bunch of it is wasted on government bureaucracy and all of that. So money is more effective. $100,000 in the private sector in a nonprofit to go to hungry people at a food bank will go 10 times farther than $100,000 of taxpayer funds funneled through the government bureaucracy and red tape and how much actually ends up helping people. So this stuff is nonsense. So don't let the Democrats make you feel guilty. Oh, food banks. Like, oh, skating lessons for immigrants. It's just ridiculous and laughable. And they're like children. It's wild. All right. I do want to follow up on some breaking news we had on the show yesterday, because it came at the end of the show. So for those of you who weren't watching till the end of the show yesterday, of course, there was the big news. You heard it here on Undivided, that Governor Bob Ferguson decided he was going to rescind the release of mass murderer Timothy Pawley, who, of course, killed three people in 1980 at the Barn Door Tavern in SeaTac, tried to kill two others. And Bob Ferguson, I mean, I give him a ton of credit for this. As I did on the show yesterday, sure, did he probably see it as a good political move? Yes. But I'm not going to say that he didn't also believe it was the right thing to do. And he released his sort of rationale, saying he disagrees with the Indeterminate Sentencing Review Board and former Governor Jay Inslee's conclusion that Timothy Pawley has been rehabilitated. He says he really doesn't see any evidence that this isn't just Timothy Pawley saying what he needs to say in order to be granted release. So he told the family first. We heard from the family, and then Governor Ferguson put out a press release about his decision. And he's getting, you know, pretty widely thanked for it, I would say, even from his, I want to jump really quick to this Dave Reichert statement, Nicole, if we can. So Dave Reichert, of course, not only the former sheriff of King County, not only a former congressman, he ran against Bob Ferguson for governor in 2024. And he also was on the scene that night. At the Barn Door Tavern in 1980. So he saw the horror that Timothy Pawley put his victims through. And he has since remained very close with the family members and has been with them every step of the way. He sent us a statement this morning. I was very disappointed to learn that our previous governor decided to release this dangerous killer on his last day in office. He disrespected and ignored the unbearable pain and agony that the family has carried for decades. I want to thank Governor Ferguson for taking the time to meet with the surviving family members. He went on to say, I congratulate him on having the courage to do the right thing by rescinding the Inslee order. He has sent a clear message that Washington State will stop blaming victims and excusing criminals. I pray he will continue to be the change agent, as he said during the campaign. So again, getting credit there from Dave Reichert, who he is, and the family is so, they have so much like love and respect and appreciation for Dave Reichert, because he really has been there for them. Kelly was telling us that she'll pick up the phone when she's having a hard time in tears and call Dave Reichert, and he'll always pick up and talk to her through it. And so just he's been exceptional for that family. We also heard from the House Republican leader, Rep. Drew Stokesbury. He put out a statement saying, this outcome would not have been possible without the incredible courage of the victims' families who refused to let their loved ones be forgotten. And I agree with that. Had they not come out, Angie and Kelly, and been willing to do another round of media and to put this out there, I don't know that you would have had the same outcome. So they do deserve all the credit for it. Drew went on to say, we commend the governor for his willingness to meet with them this week and carefully review the extensive record before reaching this conclusion. Today, their voices mattered and justice prevailed. We also did get a statement from Kelly Dowell Tarp, whose father was killed by Timothy Pawley and mother nearly killed. She said, Governor Ferguson heard us. He truly heard us and looked at the facts. Pawley is not rehabilitated. This is all about justice. And for our loved ones who no longer have a voice, that we did not stop. We made sure to give them their voice. Thank you, Governor Ferguson. Yeah. So credit where credit is due. I appreciate him doing that. I saw some people in comments saying, yeah, I bet this is a distraction for all the other things. It's like, just give him the win, right? Mm-hmm. He did the right thing in this case, and it is having a profound impact on these families and the people who were involved. Now, I will say, I don't know that this is the end of the road in the Timothy Pawley case. He can always re-petition for release. Unfortunately, this is what the system puts victims through. You have to repeatedly worry about these things, repeatedly fight for yourselves and your families and your loved ones, and it's just not right. I will say, if I can do one lighthearted thing, we reported the exclusive on the show that the internal email says DOC let State Representative Tara Simmons be the one to tell Timothy Pawley he was getting released. Literally, the deputy director at the Department of Corrections had staff members bring a cell phone to Timothy Pawley with soft on crime State Rep Tara Simmons on speakerphone so she could break the news to him that he was getting out. And apparently he was overjoyed, according to DOC. I volunteer to be the one, if it hasn't been done already, to tell Timothy Pawley that he's not being released. I'm sure that's a call Tara Simmons didn't want to make. It's like, oh, don't put me on speaker with him for this one. So
I was in Monroe last night for a lacrosse game, and I looked over at the jail and was like,
prison.
Our prison. Bye, bitch.
Oh, my God.
I never swear on the show, but
good night.
Good night. Sleep tight.
Well, sleep tight. The only, you know, I do have some sympathy always. I've had family members who've been involved in the criminal justice system. It's never fun to have a family member because you love them no matter what, right? They're your family. And I understand, like, Timothy Pawley, one of his family members was with him when he learned he was getting out. Always have sympathy for the family members of even people who have committed crimes because you didn't do that, right? And it sucks to have a family member who's incarcerated and you go through a lot as a family. So, like, I have sympathy for that. But Timothy Pawley, no sympathy, sir.
None. Sorry.
No sympathy whatsoever. But so we'll see what the next, and I don't know if they can challenge this. I don't know if you can challenge a governor's his decision to rescind it. I don't see how you would do that. He has pretty broad power in that regard.
I think you just I don't know how long this goes for, but I don't know how long it extends for because Inslee last put a stop to it in 22. So I'm not sure how many
every couple years,
maybe something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, people really love your bye, bitch. He's not going anywhere, but good night. Sleep tight.
The lights came on, and I was like, sleep well.
Sleep well, sir. good stuff. Okay, gun bills. So we had William Kirk with Washington Gun Law on the show a few weeks ago because there were like a long laundry list of gun-related anti-2A bills. And so where are things now? He's going to join us to give us an update. First, if you're thinking about selling your home this year, look at the month of May. Our friend Wes Jones with sellwithwes.com says May is going to be a strong year or a strong month to list your home. People like buying homes in May. I guess it's that sort of spring into a new life sort of vibe. Weather's getting nice and all those things. So he says right now, it's totally a seller's market. There's a lot of pent up buyer demand, but you still need to make sure it's not like you can just throw your, I'm just going to throw it up and hope it does well. You still need to put some effort in. So you need to make sure your home is properly prepared for sale and that it's priced correctly. Wes Jones and his team can help you with both of those things. In fact, you know, all of the this is one of the worst parts of selling a home is having to go in and make updates and come out of pocket, all this money to, I don't know, put a new kitchen in or whatever it is. Well, Wes Jones and his team can not only help manage all of that, they can even set it up so you pay for those costs at closing, which I think is a really cool service that definitely takes some stress out of the process. So by all means, reach out to a few real estate agents, ask them what they bring to the table, but don't select one until you've reached out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. A better way to sell your home. All right, in Olympia yesterday, there was a massive hearing on the permit to purchase bill that Democrats seem pretty determined to pass this year. And yes, it would require you to have a permit to exercise your Second Amendment rights. So I'm not the expert on firearms, but our friend William Kirk with Washington Gun Law is, and he joins us to update us on where some of these gun bills are for the session. William Kirk, welcome back to Undivided.
Thank you so much for having me again, Brandy.
Yeah, so I think things are looking slightly better than they were last time we had you on. I mean, there was a long, long list of gun-related bills. It seems to have narrowed quite a bit. So what are the big ones left?
Well, the big one is still House Bill 1163, the permit to purchase. Had a big hearing down in the Senate yesterday, which we'll probably go over in a moment. And the other one is Senate Bill 5098, new gun-free zones, predominantly where children play. Huge carve out in that statute or in that bill, I should say, for concealed pistol license holders.
Gotcha. And then are they still floating the 11% tax on guns and ammo?
That one went to committee and never got out. So theoretically, none of the other bills made it out of its house of origin. Now, granted, the Democrats could vote to suspend the rules and turbo something through, but we don't see that often in Olympia. So I think the rest of the bills have kind of gone to hibernation for this legislative session.
Yeah, and there is some more leeway when it comes to bills that have some sort of serious tie to the budget. So I don't know if they'll try to make that argument with that one. But obviously, let's talk about the permit to purchase.
Yeah.
It was a massive showing against that bill when it was heard in the Senate. What were the numbers, pro versus con?
Yeah, well, I was down there in Olympia yesterday with a lot of other Second Amendment warriors from the state. There were 855 people that signed in favor of the bill, and there was just a little over 8,100 people who signed in against the bill.
Yeah, another one of those 80-20. Well, that's more than 80-20 issues.
Yeah, 90-10. This is a 90-10 issue, according to that. Now, if you watch the public testimony, as you know, the Democrats will stack it so that even when you have a huge, massive majority in one side, the public oral testimony will appear relatively balanced.
And was that all just natural, like that many people, or was there a real organized effort to try to make sure that there was a pretty strong showing against it yesterday?
I just think it's just the word's gotten out. I think a lot of different people have been talking about this because the bill really is kind of offensive in nature. People who watch your platform, if people watch other people's platforms. And then we were fortunate enough to also have the National Association for Gun Rights, a large national organization that's really taken an interest in this issue and are kind of using some of their resources and platforms to educate the public as well.
Yeah, so I was messaging with you over the weekend, and I think I've said this on the show, I just bought my first gun.
Congrats.
And look, like, I knew that the process had gotten out of control from talking to people like you and other individuals who have, you know, been buying guns for years. I guess until I went through it, I didn't really fully grasp how absurd it is. And it really felt like, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, you're probably like, duh, Brandy, yeah, we've been saying this for years. It felt like the whole process was designed to get me to give up.
Yeah.
I really felt that way because it was so cumbersome. And yeah. And also, like, if I had been buying a gun because I felt like there was some imminent threat to my life, which actually how would that
emotional experience differed from what you went through? Because what you went through was annoyance.
Yes.
Right? But what if it was complete fear and terror you were going through because you were being stalked or something like that? And unfortunately, that's a real situation that occurs every day, not only in Washington State, but nationwide.
So I'm curious, my question is, I mean, that was a total, it was a shit show. It was insane. And I'm like standing in long lines, my back hurt, like, oh my gosh, I'm sitting here, my back hurts trying to exercise my Second Amendment rights because I've been standing for so long waiting for this process. So what would the permit to purchase add to the already sort of bureaucratic process of trying to buy a firearm?
Yeah, so everyone needs to understand right now that if you just go in and you buy a firearm without a permit to purchase, you're waiting 10 days anyway. Understand, in addition to that 10-day waiting period, now you're gonna have to sign up for a class. You're gonna have to go through live fire training. I don't know how a person goes through live fire training when in fact they don't have a firearm to actually use in live fire training. And so if you accomplish all of those goals and you can afford all of it, now we probably have added at least 3 to 5 weeks to the process. Then you go to get the firearm, you add another 10 days on top of that. So you're talking about people who might take up to 2 months, if everything goes really, really well, to be able to actually arm themselves.
I mean, I don't see how that's constitutional. Is this one where you're pretty confident it'll be struck down? It's just going to be another kind of matter of time thing?
Well, that's a tough question. If we're going to rely on the state Supreme Court and things like that, no, it will not be struck down at all. Is there a possibility that we're going to begin to see a lot more of this type of litigation on a federal level? Yes, I do believe this is one of the next battlefronts in the Second Amendment battle, if you would. And so I think perhaps the Supreme Court could weigh in on that, but that's going to be a ways down the road. So I think this is going to be a reality for everyone in Washington State, just like it is for everyone in Oregon right now as well.
And you don't see at this point anything stopping it from getting signed into law by the governor?
I see no reason why the governor would veto this bill.
Yeah, he's been pretty pro, well, anti-gun.
Yeah, I think that Governor Ferguson has surprised us in a couple areas, whether he's really being sincere or not. I think that the jury's still out on that. But I think that Governor Ferguson, going all the way back to his time as Attorney General, has been very consistent about how he views civilian disarmament.
Yeah, really quick on the anti-gun zones. I continue to be baffled by this because what they do is keep adding places that they don't want you to be able to have a gun. So when they're looking at this bill right now, you said there is a carve out for people who have a concealed pistol license, right?
Correct.
So I guess I'm kind of confused what they hope to accomplish because in their mind, if I try to go into their mind, they're like, well, let's keep these areas safe so that people don't bring guns into them and hurt other people. But the people who do that are criminals, and the criminals aren't going to abide by the gun-free zones anyway. So who are they trying to, whose behavior are they trying to change with this?
They're really not. They're just in a position here where if they can't ban us from outright having access to firearms, what they're going to do is they're just going to start banning all the places where we can defend our lives through the use of firearms. And, you know, you take a look at like the Crime Prevention Research Center, it shows that basically 85% of all mass shootings shockingly occur inside of gun-free zones because, well, that's where you're least likely to have armed resistance.
Yeah, I mean, I realize I'm asking you questions that there is no reasonable answer to because we don't really know what's going on in their minds, but...
Well, I mean, Brandy, here's the thing, is what the Democrats do with gun control is like if you broke your left leg and went into the ER and came out of the ER with a cast on your right leg. Because we know what the identifiable problem is. The United States Department of Justice tracks this for us. Almost 9 out of every 10 gun crimes is committed by a person who's unlawfully possessing the firearm at the time the crime is committed. So we've got the identifiable group that's creating the problem. Wouldn't we presumably write all of the laws to go after that identifiable population group? But no, instead, we write all the laws to go after your viewers, my viewers, people like you and me. And that's why it's literally like you're going in with a broken left leg. We know what the problem is. The x-rays show it, but we put the cast on the right leg.
You know,
maybe we don't want to actually fix the problem.
That's a really good description for virtually everything our state government is doing right now on any problem, yeah. not just crime and gun control. Really quick, end with this. They're attaching emergency clauses to a lot of things, and I guess there's some 2A enthusiasts who might want to know how much time they have before permit to purchase kicks in. So is there an emergency clause on this?
There is not.
So July 1st.
November 1st, 2026. And I think it's going to be hard-pressed for the state to be ready to go by then because one of the things the bill does not do is create the budget because you're going to have massive more resources with the Washington State Patrol and the Department of Licensing will both be involved in this. There's all new infrastructure that needs to be placed, and that stuff doesn't come cheap. So stay tuned for details.
Got it. So usually a bill would go into law on the 1st of July if there's not an emergency clause, but because they need all that infrastructure to be built up, they're claiming November 2026. So that's the date people need to be aware of.
As the bill sits today, of course, that could be changed.
Okay. All right. William Kirk, you're the man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brandy.
Yeah, so at least there's a little time before it goes into effect, but it seems like it is. And again, I know that sounds silly because some of you have already gone through this a million times, but it was really an ordeal trying to buy a firearm. And I mean, even after the point you passed the background test, I mean, it was just, or the background check, it was just absolutely insane. So permit to purchase likely coming to Washington State very, very soon. So get your guns now, I guess. But we appreciate William Kirk updating us on what's going on. Okay, let's see here. Are we skipping right to Unbelievable today? Let's just do it. Let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right. So, of course, the new attorney general, Nick Brown, is just following in the footsteps of the old attorney general, Bob Ferguson, and he's going to sue Trump on every single thing he can to get on the news. I guess there are some things that shock me for optics, though. So Donald Trump came out and he signed an executive order that he says is about preserving and protecting the integrity of American elections. And one of those things is mandating proof of citizenship, which you can't vote in this country by law if you're not a citizen of this country. So I guess I fail to understand the controversy in taking an additional step of requiring proof. Because in Washington state, as we've discussed, as the law exists now, there is no sort of formal, it's like the honor system, essentially. Now, you could get charged with a felony if you're in the country illegally and you end up voting. But unless and until someone sort of flags your vote and an investigation is launched, you might be able to just get away with it and never actually be held accountable for it. So, I mean, you're taking a risk that you could be charged with a felony. But in our state, you really think that they're out there figuring out, is this person a citizen or not? It's actually very easy to be able to vote as a non-citizen if you're willing to potentially face the consequences of doing so. So call me crazy. I just failed to understand why voter ID is controversial, making sure that the person voting is the person who should be voting, making sure that proof of citizenship is controversial. Why not head off any potential issues or challenges or prosecutions or whatever it is. So Donald Trump has put that out. Here is the response from Attorney General Nick Brown, which makes me think that they're going to sue over this one. It's like, I kind of dare him, because you know how bad that looks? If you're suing over an order to make it more difficult for illegal immigrants to vote, he responded, he said, "We're not going to take advice on election integrity from a guy who can't stop lying about his 2020 election loss. We have a secure and fair election system that respects voters' rights, and we will use every tool we have to protect that." That tells me he's going to sue over this. And again, we're in the middle of a budget crisis, and these are the things that they want to spend our at a time when they're facing cuts in the Attorney General's office, and his own staff members have been outside protesting the potential cuts to their office for budgetary reasons. And they're going to take on these asinine lawsuits because of ideology. That's all it is. There is no other, well, ideology, and maybe they know it hurts them if they get into the realm of voter ID and making sure that people are actually legal citizens. Now, I am not as harsh on our mail-in voting system as I know a lot of conservatives are. I like mail-in voting. I do believe that we need to make sure that our voter rolls are upkept better and that we need to throw the freaking book at anyone who is caught voting who shouldn't vote or voting in a district where they're not supposed to vote in. We saw that with a Linwood City Council member who's living in Everett but still representing and voting in Linwood. An example should have been made out of him. So, you know, all those things need to happen to make sure that people know, hey, we're taking election integrity seriously. But if we have our attorney general who wants to sue over a presidential executive order that just puts an actual check in place to make sure an illegal immigrant isn't voting, an illegal alien isn't voting, that's some pretty fringe stuff. And it's disappointing because I really thought Nick Brown was going to be this more so moderate, but I think they fall into this like Bob Ferguson did. They love the attention. They love the attention that it brings them by going after Donald Trump. And every press conference is on the national news, like with Bob Ferguson. He was one of the faces of suing the Trump administration during Trump's first term, and he was on national news all the time. And I think they just love it. So they're willing to use your resources, the office's time and energy, and attorneys pursuing absolutely ridiculous litigation against the Trump. Some of it's justified. I said the Trump order on birthright citizenship, blatantly unconstitutional. But did I think that we needed to be the ones to sue over it? No, there's like 20 states suing over it. Let them do it. We have so much going on here. We have no money. We're in a budget crisis. The result is the same whether Maine gets it overturned or Washington gets it overturned. It's still overturned and it will be overturned. But on this one, it's just they have to get in the fight because they're just so absolutely obsessed with the attention. Crazy. All right. In a double dose of unbelievable, a local Tesla vandal has been identified. Maybe not unbelievable that she's been identified, but unbelievable that the police are saying that this wasn't a political vandalism. Interesting. So I don't know if you've seen the video. Our friend Jonathan Cho put it out. I kind of mentioned it on the show the other day because it happened in a little shopping center that I'm at all the time. I mean, in Issaquah, which is sort of, I mean, this is just, you know, a suburb, fairly safe area. But again, it's those crazy 45 to 55 kind of white women who are just progressive and unhinged. You have the video, right, Nicole? So this lady gets out of her, what is that, a 4Runner or something? And goes back and is clearly yelling at the owner of this Tesla who just backed out of a parking spot. They exchange a few words and then she, you see, keys the Tesla. Now, I knew watching that, I'm like, something else had to have happened here. Because what the video shows is she just, because the Tesla records everything, which they also haven't figured out by now. It's really wild. It's weird because the video starts with this woman pulling up and stopping as this Tesla is backing out. And I'm like, it just seemed like something had to have come before it. So Jonathan Cho puts that video out. The victim files a police report. It apparently got misplaced or lost or something for a little while. Issaquah PD put out a release saying, we're looking into it. They have now identified and are referring for charges a 55-year-old Bellevue woman. According to this Issaquah press release, Issaquah Police Department has now contacted the victim and confirmed that the altercation stemmed from a road rage incident, which occurred on March 20th around 3:30 p.m., not the politically motivated attacks that have previously targeted Teslas and their owners. It was later discovered that the victim had reported the incident online through a system meant for cases without suspects' leads, and the report was in a queue for review. However, in cases like this, where there's a suspect lead, the report would have been rejected and assigned to an officer for investigation, so trying to explain why they didn't apparently know about this. Following a thorough investigation and multiple tips from the community, IPD was able to identify the 55-year-old Bellevue woman involved in the incident driving the Toyota 4Runner at the time of the event. Her name is Camelia Ensler. That, according to our friend Jonathan Cho, I have no problem naming her. She's facing charges for malicious mischief in the third degree. Malicious mischief in the third degree. Why not property damage?
I'm not sure.
Felony property damage, isn't it over a certain threshold? And I'm sorry, if you key a car and it's got to be buffed and re-whatevered.
Then yeah, I'm not sure what the threshold is, but.
Yeah, malicious mischief in the third degree sounds pretty low.
Like it sounds like they're buying her story on, oh, it had nothing to do with the fact that it was a Tesla.
Well, and they don't explain in this release what caused the road rage. So they say the case has now been closed, and based on the investigation, probable cause has been established for the woman for malicious mischief, but the case wouldn't be closed then. The case is still very much active, but it's solved, I guess, is a better way to put it. But I don't get the, when they say that it stemmed from a road rage incident, not the politically motivated attacks. Do you know that the road rage didn't stem from it? So I want to know what caused the road rage. Like, did the Tesla driver cut someone off and they followed them to this parking lot and then keyed the vehicle? Or did they get in a road rage incident because it's a Tesla? So I don't know. But that's what the Issaquah Police Department says. And that woman now facing charges for malicious mischief in the third degree.
And I don't think she came to them saying, oh, that was me, I'm going viral. I think that people, I saw Cho posted pictures of her driveway with that car in it. Same license plate, same bike rack.
Yeah, they were sending Cho evidence where it was like they thought they recognized the woman. So they went by the house, took a picture, same car, same bike rack. And then Bellevue Police.
If it had nothing to do with the Elon Tesla drama, then I feel like she would have just came out and said, hey, you know, that car ticked me off and
I was but she still knows she's on video committing a crime, right? You can't go key somebody's vehicle because they cut you off.
Right.
If that were the case, I would key 100 vehicles a day because people here cannot drive.
Mm-hmm.
I get road rage all the time, but I keep it bottled up.
I do.
And it's really unhealthy, actually, because then it just comes out. I keep it bottled up.
It comes out in the car when you're all alone. You can just yell and move on with your life.
I actually would support a law saying you can key a vehicle that left lane camps. If you're camped in the left lane for more than 2 miles, people should be able to key your vehicle.
Fair.
I think that's a pretty fair law. That'll be our next poll. Do you support this new idea from Brandy? All right, in national news, should NPR and PBS be defunded? That is the conversation happening right now in Congress. Donald Trump thinks it's a good idea. First, would you like to run your retirement portfolio through a Department of Retirement Efficiency? Our friend Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital can help you out with that. I think one of the things they see when people come to them is that their portfolios haven't been properly managed for mitigating risk. And especially right now, I mean, we know the stock market had a little tank there a couple weeks ago. And, you know, talking to Zach Abraham about it and what causes that and, you know, why you need to make sure that you have this diversified portfolio, you know, maybe more things outside the United States during times of upheaval like this. So it's all part of their risk management strategy. And what they're going to do, if you want to go to them just for a second opinion, I mean, you've got somebody managing your portfolio right now, going to them for a second opinion so they can talk to you about how they're always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. And also, I know Zach's happy to answer your questions about any concerns you might have about the stock market right now, any tariffs, whatever. However, any of that stuff happening in the at the onset of the Trump administration might impact your retirement, especially important if you're getting close to retirement. So you only get one retirement. Get a second opinion. Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. And catch today's episode of Doge Report dropped this morning. We had a good time, as always. Okay, national news. So there was a hearing called by Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is the chair of the Government Efficiency Committee. The hearing title, Anti-American Airwaves, Holding the Heads of NPR and PBS Accountable. Gotcha. I love how they just get to name the hearings whatever they want. I have been very clear on my perception of government-funded media entities, my opinion on that. So the government should never fund media with a couple caveats. C-SPAN would be a caveat or an exception nationally, and TVW would be an exception in Washington state, because they're providing a level of access for citizens to view what's happening in real time in our government that no one else in the private sector or private media is doing. And I think it's really important. I think for, I mean, and I don't think millions of Americans sit around and watch hearings on C-SPAN and watch hearings on TVW, but if people want to be able to watch their government in action, they should be able to do that. And so I'm okay with the government funding those. So the government's basically funding government accountability. I think that's a good thing. Now, no one else should get any money from the government, because it's totally contrary to what the media is supposed to do, holding the government accountable. And I do include PBS on that, and I include NPR on that. Just for optics, I'm not saying there aren't good journalists at PBS. I think that there are. But the optics of getting funding from the government while telling people you're holding the government accountable is just not a good thing. So that's kind of the idea of this committee. Should you defund them? Trump thinks it's a good idea. He was asked about whether DOGE might cut funds as part of its cost-saving efforts.
Would you be interested in defunding and taking away taxpayer dollars to NPR and PBS?
Well, I would love to do that. I think it's very unfair. It's been very biased, the whole group. I mean, the whole group of them. And frankly, there's plenty of, look at all the media you have right now. There's plenty of coverage. I was from a different age, and they spend more money than any other network of its type ever conceived. So the kind of money that's being wasted, and it's a very biased view. You know that better than anybody. And I'd be honored to see it end.
Honored.
We're well covered. Look at all the people that we have here today. We're well covered, and we don't need it, and it's a waste of money.
Yeah, and PBS is less offensive than NPR and its affiliates across the country, like KUOW. I mean, blatantly, blatantly biased. Why is the government funding blatantly biased news or any news? Even if it's blatantly biased on the right, I don't want them funding it. So let's... do we have to? It's so bad.
I know. There's a swear word in it. You know what?
It's
we don't have
so
to bleep
bad.
These things,
so. I mean, are some of our members of Congress, and frankly, there's a lot of this to go around on the Republican and Democratic sides. They are so unprofessional, immature. It is genuinely embarrassing. So let's check in on what Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett had to say when speaking on the panel to NPR's CEO Catherine Maher.
I'm going to skip off real quick because they have tried to come for you, Ms. Mayor. And I just want to clarify, you did not work for NPR when those statements were made, did you?
That is correct, Madam.
And to be clear, free speech is not about whatever it is that y'all want somebody to say. And the idea that you want to shut down everybody that is not Fox News is bullshit. We need to stop playing, because that's what y'all are doing in here. You don't want to hear the opinions of anybody else. And the Constitution says Congress shall make no law respecting or establishing of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the
gentlewoman's time has expired. The gentlewoman's time has expired.
And, you know, one of the things, and I'll just say it, she acts like she is literally from the hood. Can I say this? She went to like a pricey private school. There's all these old videos of her being perfectly respectful and not talking like that. And just, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. On the other side of the crazy coin, we'll save the Marjorie Taylor Greene one. We got one more Democratic one. So they're making fun of Republicans who think like PBS is pushing indoctrination on kids. This is Representative Robert Garcia of California, Democrat.
Is Elmo now, or has he ever been, a member of the Communist Party of the United States? A yes or no?
No.
Now, are you sure, Ms. Kerger? Because he's obviously red.
Well, he is a puppet, but no.
Now, we know that Health Secretary RFK Jr. is coming out against fast food and baked goods. Are we silencing pro-cookie voters? Yes or no?
This is for real.
Yes. But cookies are a sometime food.
Now, Ms. Kerger, since Elon Musk actually fired USDA workers who have been working on the bird flu, does it make sense to also fire Big Bird? Yes or no?
We would like to keep Big Bird.
This, of course, is Bert and Ernie. Now, these two guys actually live together. They're friends. They're supportive of each other. Now, that might be triggering to our chairwoman and some in this committee, and perhaps that's also why we're here today. Ms. Kerger,
yes.
An important question. Are Bert and Ernie part of an extreme homosexual agenda?
No.
Oh, I love how he's like, yeah, we're at that hearing because Republicans don't like that Bert and Ernie are gay, mm-hmm. cohabitating. I mean, I kind of like the troll. I thought that was kind of funny, but still, it's a congressional hearing, and these things have just gone so far beyond the realm of anything even remotely serious. Speaking of things not remotely serious, here's Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene with her closing statement.
The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is using taxpayer dollars to actively suppress the truth, suppress diverse viewpoints, and produce some of the most outlandish, ludicrous content. After listening to what we've heard today, we will be calling for the complete and total defund and dismantling of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Here's how it works. In America, every single day, private businesses operate on their own without government funding. We believe that you all can hate us on your own dime.
Okay, that was good. It's kind of weird when Marjorie Taylor Greene is like gives a more sane statement than most people on the committee. Oh my gosh, that's bad. All right, I want to fit this story in because we were going to talk about it yesterday. We were running really late though. So this is out of Idaho, and I'm not torn on this. I think it should be an option. I mean, is there any worse thing you can do to as a criminal than rape a child?
I mean, other than kill and rape, those are on the same level, I think.
Murdering an adult versus raping a child. I mean, think about how evil you have to be, right?
Right.
So in Idaho, they say that right now their laws are some of the most lenient in the nation when it comes to child sex abuse, and they want to make it stronger. So they're going to take it all the way and say that for certain instances, when it comes to rape of a child, they want juries to have the option to hand down the death penalty. I'm curious what you guys think about this. So if there's some thoughts you have, I'll read them in comments. So this is HO380. The state of Idaho, it says, this is the statement of purpose for the bill. The state of Idaho is one of the least harsh in the nation for sentencing of convicted child molesters. This legislation amends Idaho code regarding the crimes of lewd conduct with a minor child under the age of 16. It allows for a jury or judge to impose the death penalty on a person convicted of certain sex crimes against children when certain statutory aggravating circumstances are proven. Florida did this, right? And I think this is the law in Florida right now. There are certain crimes when it comes to sex offenses that you can actually be put to death for. I don't know if Florida's actually sentenced anyone to death.
I'm not sure.
I didn't look that up. If actually, we could ask Miranda on Florida Report tomorrow to look into that for us. But I gotta say, I'm not opposed to it because it's not saying you have to sentence them to death. You know, for instance, there are some crimes where it's like the only option for aggravated murder in the first degree in most states is life in prison or death. Washington State doesn't put anybody to death, but interesting thought. Let me know how you feel about it. All right, we'll get to comments, our daily show poll, and our sanity check coming up next. First, take the first mark challenge. Don't wait another day because you could be spending money that you could otherwise be saving. We've heard from undivided viewers and listeners who save thousands of dollars a year because they took that simple step. They said, oh, I've heard Brandy talk about it enough. I'm going to call First Mark. I'm going to take the First Mark challenge. And then they come back and they're like, Brandy, why did I wait so long to do that? Yeah, that's exactly my question. So the First Mark insurance challenge entails this. You schedule a call with them, take about half hour to an hour of time, go over your current insurance, talk to them about your insurance needs. They go out, they shop their market of carriers for you completely for free. You never pay First Mark anything. They'll come back with their recommendations. They might say, hey, you know, you actually have pretty good insurance for your home, for your car. We really can't do anything for you, but check back with us again the next time your insurance changes. So no harm, no foul. You leave better informed and patting yourself on the back. Or they're going to say, hey, you're paying way too much for your insurance. We can get you, you know, insurance that's just as good or even better for less than you're paying now. And we hear that story so many times. Eric says that they saved him 30% on his auto policy, a whopping 70% on his homeowner's policy. He says, I now tell anyone I know who's dealing with changes to their insurance to give First Mark a call. I did, and I'm truly richer for it. So do what Eric did and so many other undivided viewers. Take the First Mark challenge today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X. If you want to participate in our show poll, you have to be a subscriber, so you can sign up today on Patreon, Locals, or X. I asked you guys, what area of the state budget would you least like to see cuts impact? That is, if Democrats are going to cut anything. But if cuts have to be made, where do you least want to see that money come from? Of the options given, people, I didn't put public safety in there because everybody would have just picked public safety, which I understand. So I didn't include that one. Education, transportation, or social services? Nicole, is there a sacred cow among those three?
For me, I would say transportation, but I really wish that someone would come in and look at the way they waste in transportation. So I don't want to see them cut back on what they're doing, because I actually think they need to do more, and they need to do it quicker, and they need to expedite these issues that they have along the way. But there is so much waste. I have a lot of family members that work in transportation, construction. There's so much waste. It is incredible.
Oh, I agree. And some of these intricate designs they put under the bridges and, you know, on those sound barrier things. And it's like, okay, at the end of the day, it's still a concrete wall. Mm-hmm. You're not going to make it look nice by putting some stamps of some leaf designs or some fish.
Oh, but it's not even just that. It's what they're doing. I mean, for instance, what they're doing in the Stanwood area right now, they're taking out perfectly good freeway, and this is going to be almost a year-long project to like reroute a salmon covert, whatever. I mean, the extent of it is unreal.
Salmon culvert thing. Well, that stemmed from a court ruling, but it's like still such waste.
Such waste, the way that it has to happen, and I'm sure there's some other option, because it's nuts what's going to happen to traffic up there. And just they're taking apart perfectly good freeway.
Essentially anything freeway related to climate. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's so much money put into the climate grift from the thing. So you say transportation. Most people in our poll saying transportation, although some pretty big chunks for education and social services saying that would be the area they'd least want to be cut of the options given. Let's see. Kevin says this is a tough poll. The pig is fat in all these, and education and social services are used to scare everyone. Well, we drive on the roads and we thrash our cars on the and we trash our cars on the horrible roads. We need to actually do something about the roads. Yeah, it seems like I'm okay spending money on transportation and infrastructure and stuff, but not the wasty way that you're doing it.
Right. You don't need to keep taking.
Yeah. Robert says DOT is in the worst shape after the last 12 years of neglect and dismal management. Bill says, I'm concerned how they spend our money on all three. It's a hard decision, but I will go with transportation as the least one that I would want them to cut from. However, they will cut not from what makes sense, but from what will scare the most people into agreeing to more taxes. Yes, Bill, you get it. Education and whatever the food banks. Oh, don't make us cut. We have to cut from the food banks. Al, I've worked in education. There is plenty of room for cuts. Talk to the grunts on the ground, scrutinize the levy. And Vivian said, cut all fat such as WEA from education. Stop the bleeding from worthless social programs with no results. Yeah, like the $70 million you're going to gift to your buddies at the WEA, your little puppet masters. Y says, I switched my vote to education. As much as they suck at it, cutting funds to essential education won't help anyone. DEI and transgender stuff, yeah, go ahead and cut it. And that's some of the stuff that doesn't really, like, cost money, you know? Right. That's just teachers getting in the classroom being like, you know, you should be trans.
Although they are doing...
Ronald Reagan's a homophobe or whatever.
There is a department, and they're at OSPI, I believe there's a department an employee or something assigned to it. Plus, there's all the teacher training that goes into DEI training. And so there is money that is going into that stuff. I mean,
it's wild. Overarching, there's a Department of Equity in the state.
Right.
And that encompasses everything, all the state agencies. So that could be cut and save us $19 million a year. Don't you want to know what they do every day? The Department of Equity. They find ways to make us hate each other and make us feel divided on the basis of race and sexual orientation and all those other things. Woody says, it's a tough choice, Brandy. I would like to see all of them put under a strong scrutinization to find waste and corruption, i.e. DOGE. Matt says, I pick social services. The problem is that the agencies that provide these services are run by incompetent people who are not good stewards of taxpayer money. Incompetent and or corrupt. I would say corruption also has a lot to do with it. Padding their own pockets and the pockets of their buddies. Okay, let's get to some comments here. Bill Biz, $20 Super Chat. Brandy and Nicole, Ferguson's reversal of Inslee's pardon is wonderful news, a rare dose of common sense for the governor's office. I'm still mystified about Inslee's motive for issuing the pardon. It is mystifying, isn't
it? We all are mystified.
It is. You know, I'm mostly mystified by Jay, really, anything he does and says.
I don't know what it could be other than a big F you on the way out.
Yeah, or...
I don't know.
It's very strange. Or just, I don't care. So I'm just going to do it because somebody asked me to. I don't know.
I don't know.
Shad McVeigh. That's quite the name. Is that a real name? It sounds like a... sounds like a gang member or something. Like a Gangs
like
of
a
London.
TV show.
Yeah. I hope Boeing goes as well if they are dumb enough to pass this payroll tax. Yeah. No business will be off limits in terms of the businesses that pay their employees well, so they can't escape Saddle to get away with it. Matthew Adams, how about the state GOP dividing over the protest at Rep. Tara Simmons' home? Criminals can come to our homes, but we can't go to theirs. Yeah, I've seen differing opinions on this. I already gave my opinion on it. Look, as someone who has been made to feel unsafe in their home because of threats, I don't want anyone to feel unsafe in their home. I also understand the irony of that, considering that the policies and laws that Tara Simmons pushes literally make people unsafe in their home. I mean, she is one of the ones who was pushing Inslee to release mass murderer Timothy Pawley. She has pushed a number of bills that would take it easy on criminals and allow violent criminals to get out of prison early. So you can understand both those things. Like, well, you're making other people feel unsafe in their home, but at the end of the day, I can't pick and choose what politicians I'm okay with harassing at their home. And you also have to understand that, like, families are off limits. To me, families are off limits. The kids of politicians didn't do anything except be born into this world. And so, yeah, again, as someone who has often felt unsafe because of, you know, being in the public sphere, I would never wish that upon anyone else or anyone else's family. If you have a problem with her, you know, schedule a meeting with her, see if she'll take it, or write angry things on the internet. I'd rather have you do that than show up at her house, for sure. Nicole, yeah. Do you feel differently?
No, I feel the same. I think you could find some other public place. I mean, you could protest. Right. Find
I'm just sure she has an office
somewhere or whatever it is. But
yeah, we're at the Capitol. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just not at her house. Night Wolf. We're just waiting for all this taxation to cost my wife her job. Her company folds or moves from the state. We're leaving too. It's unfortunate because it just happened in Seattle. It's going to happen. Mario Kart Wii fan 13. Is Wii still a thing?
Oh, yeah.
The Wii?
Yeah, I don't know that it's as big as it was just because of VR, but...
They really thought that Wii was going to be the thing that got American families in shape. You remember that?
It kind of... I mean, I don't know.
No,
that
but
it
they
didn't.
Thought this was going to end the obesity epidemic
in America. Yeah, no, it didn't do that.
Getting people who like gaming, like, out of their chairs, right?
It was pretty fun. I still enjoy it.
My husband has a Wii somewhere. I was like... did you ever play that? I cannot see him.
We should do that this weekend.
We should. Yes, we're having a little barbecue. Maybe I'll see if he still has it tucked away somewhere. I made him get rid of. He had this game where it was like, I think it was an attachment for the Wii, and it was like a shotgun.
Yeah, the Hunter.
Sure, it was huge.
There was Duck Hunter, but there was.
Use this.
Yeah.
He probably didn't get away with. He probably didn't give it away. He probably attic for sure. Matt Gilbert, I still think Bob is only using the governorship as a stepping stone and will veto everything to get primaried and run on. I was too moderate for WA for Prez. Possibly. Nicole's cat. If you can camp in the left lane, if you camp in the left lane in Arizona, you get a ticket. In theory, they can give you a ticket here too. They just maybe don't. They sure pull me over for speeding though. Although I am 7 months clean, Nicole.
From
speeding.
Oh, good job.
From getting caught speeding. But no, I've been good because I'm on a... So remember I got that speeding ticket in Ellensburg for going like 91?
Oh, yes.
I was there. I know, but I talked about it on the show too because I don't keep any secrets from you guys. And I was going too fast. So I hadn't had a speeding ticket in like 7 or 8 years. Yep. So I got it deferred. Mm-hmm. So I have to have a clean record and take some online driving safety course. So that it doesn't go on my record, so that my insurance doesn't go up.
Right.
So I'm 7 months in, baby.
Whew. Yeah. How long do you got to go? 2 years now? Is it two?
No, one.
Only one?
Yeah, I have to go one.
Oh, back in the day, I think you had to go 3 or 5 years without a ticket, then, or it was going to show up.
If I get a ticket,
then it goes right on.
Then not only the old one goes on, and the new one goes on, and the kind of then you can't ask again for another 7 to 8 years or whatever it is. So
I think you had to go further. I think you had to go longer back in the day because I had one of those when I was in my 20s, and I remember having to go. It's scary. It's a scary commitment to say, I won't speed for that long.
I know. Yeah, it is, isn't
but
it?
But there, Louie put in here, Dory had a good plan for left lane campers. And his plan, he was going to use it as part of his platform for governor.
Yeah.
And he was going to agree to have like a big crane come down and lift cars and drop them into the, in like Union.
Yep. You've just up in Lake Washington.
I think that would be a winning platform,
100%.
Right? Probably.
I'd support that. Shirley Lopez, Democrats seem to think that PBS and NPR will disappear without federal funding. If they can't support themselves, they can't be that necessary. I actually watched some PBS, but I don't think they should be federally funded. Exactly. Barron, I'll bet a $50 super chat that birthright citizenship will pass the Supreme Court. Okay. I'll take you up on that. Okay. Sure.
What does he get in return?
I will send him a link for a free year subscription.
There you go.
Yes. Defund NPR and PBS, make them complete. Make them compete, rather. JB, life for a life. A family member of mine was raped as a child and she lost so much and was never allowed a life without fear. Yeah, it impacts you forever. So $10 super chat from Rick Eckert for Nicole swearing.
It's just a baby swear.
It's a baby swear. Actually, I don't even know if that is that. Is that an anti-FCC word?
No, it's
I don't
not,
think so, because it's a female dog, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sergeant Pickles, they push the minimum wage and punish high-paying jobs to achieve the real goal, communism, where everyone is poor and dependent on the government, 100%. Mm-hmm. All right, good comments today, you guys, per the usual. And with that, Nicole, thank you.
Oh, yeah. I have to go off screen now.
Bye. Bye. She actually does have to, or we can't push the button. It just can't happen. Let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, this is Nicole's. I don't even know what our closing sanity check is. All I know is what she wrote in here. Vice President J.D. Vance spoke to Marines this morning in Virginia and had some reassuring words for Americans.
No more quotas, no more ridiculous mumbo jumbo, no more diversity trainings. We believe the real strength and the real diversity in the United States Marine Corps is that you all come from every walk of life, come from every corner of America, and you have got the strength and the purpose to win the nation's wars. And that is what the Marine Corps is going to do, just like it's done for damn near 250 years.
Hell yeah. Good one, Nicole. Love that. Oh, get you all ramped up on a Wednesday. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A special thank you to Undivided subscribers who helped make this show possible. If you would like to become a paid subscriber to Undivided, get access to our show Sundays with subscribers every week, where we do in-depth interviews, take part in our daily show polls. You can do that at undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Just click on the little box that says support the show for $5. And if you are a first responder, a veteran, or a member of the military, you can get 30% off your first year of Undivided by using the promo code USA. 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 Just kidding. That's it. I think that's it. I'll see you back here on the live show, final live show of the week tomorrow.